Before we get started, a massive thank you to our sponsors, Moonshine Hydroponics with the Nutrient Enhancer and Foliar Spray. Make sure you check those products out. Just because you're in isolation and suffering doesn't mean your plants have to be too. That's available and can be shipped, so check their website out. Also, PureSativa.com, who have all the seeds you could possibly hope for, as well as all the smoke and accessories you could ever need. If there's a product of high quality, then they're the guys that are going to have it. They also recently launched Vibes Papers. So if you're interested in trying out the new hottest rolling paper on the market, give them a shout and they have the full lineup available. As well as those guys, massive thanks to the Plug BCN and Tresor BCN, two of Barcelona's best cannabis social clubs, who right now are going through hard times not being able to be open. So show them some love and make sure that when things get back to normal, you come over and check them out for the best smoke in Barcelona and the best environment too. Welcome to this episode of the True Cannacast. Feels like it's been a while. I've not been as regular with the episodes as I'd like to have been, but we're back with this episode where I'm going to talk about becoming a breeder and what inspired me to do it and what things I started with and a little bit about my breeding history up till now. For the first few years of me growing, the idea of breeding never even popped into my mind. I always felt that I needed to get better and there was so much more to learn before I got to that point. I was so interested in trying out different things from different people. I didn't feel I had any need to make anything myself at that point because there were things available that I wanted to try and there were still flavors and varieties and strains from different people and places that I wanted to grow without ever even thinking about making something for myself. Looking back, there's times when I let males go that I wish I had kept on, and that's kind of one of the ways that I kind of developed a way for selecting my males, is that there were times before I ever started breeding that when you would get a plant that was your favorite plant in the pack, it had the best structure, it was the most stinky, and then all of a sudden you sexed it and it was a boy, and you would be heartbroken because you had to cut it and throw it away. That's kind of how I look for my boys now. I let them kind of stand out and be chosen and let them let me know that they're fucking so special that I can't get rid of them. And now that I'm a breeder, when those ones do pop up, it's a special thing. But as a grower, when you're not breeding, those plants very, very rarely pop up where it's got everything that you want in the structure and smell and everything like that, and has the look of your best female structure, and you can see a relationship that helps you kind of get an idea of what similarities there's going to be from the females flowered out of that same batch, and to see a male that's got outstanding smell and structure makes it very, very special and one that you want to be working with. And that's often how I choose things. The first time that I ever really thought about breeding, it was actually suggested to me by two people. The two people that suggested it are Milo, Big Buddha, and the other person was Soma. And those are two people that I had a lot of respect for and am good friends with. And in the industry at the time, I was just an up-and-coming person. Like, I was a nobody in essence. I was just someone that knew them through the IC Mag Cup. And that was a way that back in the early 2000s, you were able to meet breeders like Adam Dunn and Simon from Sirius Seeds and Magnus from Magnus Genetics and a lot of other breeders. The IC Mag Cup in 420, like April 420 in Amsterdam, that's where I got to meet many, many breeders because of that. And a lot of them were inspiring in many ways, some for good reasons, and some taught me things and showed me things to avoid. So I learned a lot because of IC Meg and the breeders that were available for me to actually meet and learn from and speak to and see what they were doing. So that was a massive inspiration for me. And for the first few years, I was just growing, and every 420 I would turn up to, I would turn up with a mad amount of flowers. I would always have a rucksack with me and have like 10 or 20 Tupperware in it with all different things that I'd been growing. I was strain obsessed. I was literally just constantly popping seeds, and I had a good few friends around me as well that were also popping things all the time. So yeah, it was good. I had a Haze Fiend on IC Mag, who was one of my local friends. And then there was another friend of mine, Dr. D. And then obviously there was my business partner back in the day from Connoisseur Genetics, OJD. He was always popping a lot of things. So between all the people that were around us and all the different growers that I knew, there was a lot of strains being able to be tried. So that was a good time. And eventually it did get to the stage where I felt like I had a good base of knowledge of all the different strains that existed. I was so obsessed with the overgrow strain guide. I think a lot of the things that I learned in school have just been dismissed from my memory to make space for the overgrow strain guide, because I read that religiously. I read every last thing, God knows how many times, and literally the strain information I had at that time and the desire to trial different things, the different books that I had that made me want to try different things, and being on IC Mag and having all the boutique breeders, it allowed myself and a lot of friends to be able to try some really interesting stuff from America. And that kind of opened up a whole new world of genetics, rather than being obsessed with all the European flavors that we were familiar with. Obviously, when I started growing, I went through things like white widows, white rhinos, different skunks, and different things like that that were available in Europe and that were the European brands. I grew Magnus Genetics. I grew a few different things. So yeah, it was super interesting to get hold of all of the American breeders and to start trying those crosses, because America was the place that had all of the elite cuts, and the elite cuts was where the obsession was for all the top growers back in the day on the forums and the kind of underground cannabis scene. It was all about elite growers getting elite cuts, and that's how it was done. You had to be an elite grower. You had to get to a certain point where you were growing well enough that you were doing your own selections and you're passing those out and showing people that you've got the ability to spot winning genetics and select it and give that out to different people. And then once you started doing that, you would get elite cuts, and you would start to get people would message you and offer you special cuts. Never would you ask people for cuts or offer money for cuts or anything like that. That happened occasionally, but the real growers, the real forum people, wouldn't charge money to one another. Sometimes if people had to go outside their circle, outside the forums, outside the real heady growers to get something, and you're dealing with gangsters or just not heady people, not the kind of people that are like super friendly, grower passionate, they're in it for the money, then they want money for the cuts. That's often the case. But in general, the culture back then was that elite growers earned their stripes, and that would get you to a position where you'd be gifted amazing cuts. And for me, that was always my obsession, was trying all of the American cuts. And the real entry to trying a lot of those cuts was the IC Mag Cup. I think it was the IC Mag Cup in maybe 2006. I think it's the 2006 one, where basically everyone entered Sour Diesel. And Sour Diesel was the most hyped up elite cut on the forums at that time, the ECSD, East Coast Sour Diesel. That one that ResDog, Reservoir Seeds, had gotten on the East Coast, that was the real super sour diesel, like had the most incredible unique terp profile. That one there was so special. That won first, second and third place, I think, at the IC Mag Cup that year. Jimmy Nitz grew it the best. He won overall, I believe. And later down the line, I came to realize that Jimmy Nitz was the best grower. I think at that time, the people that entered and placed were Smokey the Puffmaster, who was probably the nicest person I've fucking ever met on IC Mag. Him and his wife were just incredible people. I hope he's doing well, Smokey the Puffmaster. He's an amazing, good-hearted person. And yeah, it's been a while since I heard from him. If he's out there, I hope he's doing well. The other people that placed were ResDog and then Jimmy Nitz. And Jimmy Nitz was a seriously good grower. He's one of the people that showed me what the top level was. Like, he is someone that I realized, all right, like, now I know, like, when I'm hitting levels, I've got a measuring stick now, because he was able to really come with something incredible that year. And there were lots of people doing incredible things. And it was around these kind of times where, although I wasn't entering cups, I started to bring a lot of flowers with me and show people my flowers. And the respect I was getting and the feedback I was getting was getting me very, very excited. Like, it made me very confident about what I was doing and gave me a lot of, like, yeah, it gave me a lot of hope that my progress was coming along, because there were times when I turned up at events and I just wasn't on the level of the people around me, and I could see the difference. And when it comes to those situations, I made sure that I asked questions, because if I can see something's better than what I'm doing, I want to know why. And slowly I started to tweak things and flush for longer, and slowly I got myself to the levels of the people that I looked up to and respected. My opinion on levels is kind of like this. I feel like the best growers in the world are on average getting an 8 out of 10 in their room. And occasionally when something's really stand out, that's when it's a 9. And those are the ones that between your friends, you're as a grower, you will say to your friend, like, yeah, this one came out real good. Otherwise, you just play everything down. You should always be humble in them situations. But occasionally, when you get a 9 and you know it's something special, that's when you need to say to your friends, like, yeah, give this one a try. This one's come out real good. And over time, I realized that I was on those levels. I was getting good results, and not all of them, but there were times when I'd pick out a few plants out of the room and they were at a level where I know that's as good as it gets, kind of thing. Now, obviously there's improvements that can be done, and until you've got a climate controlled room and everything's 100% perfect, it's never going to be a perfect grow. But I hope you understand what I'm saying when I say, you know, you're getting to that top level where you've done everything you can and the results are coming out, where it's turning heads and people are asking questions about your growing as well. So yeah, over time I got to that level, and one of the confirmations that I was at that level was in 2007 when I entered the IC Mag Cup. And what had happened is in 2006, I met Grateful Head and Mrs. Head from Grateful Head Seeds. It was at the 2006 IC Mag Cup in Amsterdam that I actually met them. And they were two of the most incredible people. I fell in love with the both of them immediately. And we became very good friends. And I got a bunch of seeds off of them. So by the 2007 IC Mag, I was able to grow out Casey Jones and enter that into the IC Mag Cup, where I finished second place to JLP, who entered the Sour Diesel. I was so happy to finish second place. For me, JLP's one of the biggest legends in online history. What he done and the amount of free seeds he gave out, and the quality of grower he was. It was an honor to finish second to him. And at that time, everyone was so obsessed with sour diesel that I kind of knew that that was one of those flavors that stood out so much that it was gonna win if someone put in a well-grown entry. But for me to get second place with my Casey Jones and to get so much good feedback from people, that was a time when I realized, like, all right, I finally feel happy with where I'm at in my growing, because up until then I'd been so critical. But that was one of the first times I really felt proud about what I was doing, and to get a second place at the IC Mag Cup was like the crowning glory for my kind of up to that point 7 years of growing and constantly learning. And yeah, I'm still learning now. Trust me, I don't think there's ever been a point where I haven't been fucking learning when it comes to growing. If you think there's nothing to learn, then God, you're never going to improve. And trust me, when I see the way things are being done out in America now and what level the rooms can be done at, I know I've got so much improving to do. I know my hands-on ability and understanding of the plant is as good as it can get. But when it comes to actually getting environment perfect and all of these other little tweaks, I know that there's a long way to go. But luckily, the game is changing and people are becoming experts at doing these things and setting rooms up. And like I always say to people, I'm a chef, not a kitchen fitter. But if I've got a kitchen, I can cook up a storm. And that's what I mean with grow rooms. If someone can come in and give me the grow room that I need, then I can do an amazing job with it. And now that we're learning so much about grow rooms and getting the climate control perfect for the whole time and tweaking things at each like special point in time and getting everything perfect makes it so much easier to get to the point where eventually one day we will get 10 out of 10 grows, where someone will be able to look at a computer and say that every last factor, every last parameter was in the perfect sweet spot for every day of growth for a plant. And then it was dried, cured and trimmed in perfect conditions. And then I think, yeah, we will get to the point with a 10 out of 10 grow. I do believe it's achievable and I look forward to the day that it comes. It was actually at a High Times. The first ever High Times I went to was the time that it got suggested to me by Big Buddha and possibly Soma around the same time as well. But I remember Big Buddha saying to me, like, yeah, your bud's on a level now. If you should start thinking about breeding. And it had got to the point there where I was starting to wonder about combining different things. And I did have it in my mind about what potential different crosses would go together. And now I was kind of searching out genetics that were crosses that I would like to do, rather than just being ones that I would like to try. So I was looking for things that were more my own preference now, rather than just trying to get everything under my belt. Because to begin with, I wanted to just try everything. And then I started to look in more certain directions of what I liked and what things I wanted. So that ultimately, at that time, because of the lack of seed companies, and you could probably have named them all, on like, if at the time I knew enough about breeding to tell you how many breeders, like how many different companies there were, I was that obsessed with seed companies and the whole growing that you could have probably named maybe 100 or so seed companies that existed or something like that. I just know it wasn't a lot. And without sounding harsh, another one of the things that kind of, I think it inspires a lot of people to breed, is when you see so many different breeders putting stuff out that isn't really that good. You know, when you grow and you spend months doing different people's things and it's not up to a certain level, it starts to make you think, fucking hell, I could have done better myself. So I know there were times when I grew stuff out from people that had a lot of respect from people, had a lot of respect from myself and seemed to be doing a good job. And then you would grow stuff of theirs and be so disappointed that you just wonder if you could do better yourself. And once you've got a good understanding of plants and you have got a good experience and you've kind of served your apprenticeship, there's no reason why people can't figure these things out and do some breeding, because yeah, once you do get a good feel for plants, you can then start breeding, and once you breed, you'll learn even more because you'll use a male, cross it to multiple things, grow those different things out, and from the traits that are passed on that you see that are common amongst all of the different strains, you'll start to learn what your male does and then be able to use the male for the breeding traits that it possesses, rather than just blindly chucking pollen. So that's kind of the things that sadly people lack these days. Back then, like I say, I had such high respect for breeders and thought that things were done so properly that I it wasn't something I would have thought of doing originally. And then over time, I realized that not everyone's doing it to the high level that I thought it should be done. And that made me more want to do it myself and more want to see what my things could do. And one of the things that started to happen was I was getting to go out to the East Coast a lot. And during that time, I was around breeders like Resdog and Head. And also I was around Jimmy Nitz. I got to see his quality and get seeds from him. Also, I got to see incredible inspirational growers like Crazy Composer and a bunch of other people who were doing amazing things. So during that time, I became obsessed and got to try all of the elite cuts pretty much that were available in the scene at that time. I got to go through all of the Chem Dog family. I smoked the Chem Dog Sister, the Snow Dog, the Chem D, the Chem 4. The only one I didn't try at that time was the Chem 91. But all the other ones I tried, the Jeezel, I tried so many good cuts. I tried a lot of amazing cuts. I tried everything Rez had, basically. I tried a bunch of stuff that would come via Jimmy Nitz that Grateful Head would have, and he would have a lot of incredible cut-ins. I tried a lot of the OG Kush cut-ins, the Abusive, a bunch of different ones, the SFV, loads of different things. But it was really my big dive into American genetics, and it made me obsessed with Chem D. Chem D for me is the number one. Chem D is the GOAT, and I understand why people say that, and I'm 100% in agreement with that, because I love that plant. I have such fond memories of it and being around it and smoking it. The Sour Diesel too is something that's just so magical, but the Sour Diesel is a bitch to get dialed in. If it seems like 100 growers can have the Sour Diesel cut, the original one, the real deal one, and probably 95 of them, it ain't going to taste like the real cut, and 5 of them will get it right and have it tasting like a dream. But with the Chem D, that one, it just seems like when it's done, it's just so special. Very few people fuck that one up, and yeah, it is something that I fell in love with, and it's been a big influence on my breeding and my time on the East Coast, trying all of the American strains and learning from people like Grateful Head and also Resdog. Trust me, I learned as much good as I did bad from him, things to avoid and things not to do. And I saw how he done things slapdash and how he let other people do things for him. And he told me exactly how he wanted his seeds making, and I done a project for him. And that was, in fact, the first ever seed project that I ever did, was a project for Resdog. For those of you that don't know the Reservoir Seed story, he was basically a grower that got lucky and got the East Coast Sour Diesel cut. And not long after that, he also got hold of the Chem D and a bunch of Chem family cuts. And because of those, he built a seed company that had an insane online following. He was moving so many seeds that he just wasn't able to keep up with the demand himself. And that was mostly because he didn't know what the fuck he was doing. And his seed crops were always really small numbers. So over time, he started to farm out a lot of his projects. The more popular the Sour Diesel and Chem Dog got, the more he would farm out projects to other people. And that's kind of where I came into the picture. Back then, before Rez was a snitch, his character didn't matter to a lot of people as far as it came to purchasing his seeds. All people really wanted was the best of the best. And like I said, anyone that grew out his stuff kind of knew that there was some fire in it. But the more of his stuff you grew out, the more you realized it was very hit and miss. And the results weren't because of his skills. They were a result of the stock that he had to breed with and being able to hit the East Coast Sour Diesel and Chem D. Those clones are so special that it doesn't take a lot of brain power to figure out how to get them into seed form in a half decent representation. And to be fair to him, he had the intelligence to do the reading, and he was a fan of Brothers Grimm and did a lot of the research and technique based on the Cindy 99 project and back crossing. So he did have some sense and rhyme to reason to what he was actually doing. I was introduced to him by mutual friends. Anyone that remembers Rez Online knows that he wasn't the nicest of people, but the truth is that he had some fire genetics and people were willing to ignore him being a bit of a dick in order to get the genetics that they couldn't get anywhere else. He would just write fantasy bullshit and like live a fake life on IC Mag to try and make him sound more exciting to people. And he was a big Hunter S. Thompson fan, and he does have some level of intellect, so he was able to spin some fanciful bullshit that people bought into. Myself, I was never really a fan of his, but after being introduced to him, I did warm to him a little bit. But over time, you kind of realize that he's out to serve just himself. And once he realized that it was easier for him to get me to make some seeds, he approached me to do a seed project. And that seed project was the Chem IBL. So that was a perfect thing for me. He knew that I'd been around a lot of the breeding process for those crosses up to the second back cross when I was traveling over to the East Coast. So I was very aware of what things had been selected, what smells the Chem D gives off, what males had been chosen, and what things had direction-wise had been bred in to get that to where it was. And also, Rez was a very snaky person, because what he liked about the IBL was he didn't have to give over the Chem D cut itself for me to make it. So he was able to get me to make seeds, but then not give me a real cut. And around that same time, he actually put a block on me getting a cut of the East Coast Sour Diesel from a mutual friend. So he kind of showed his true colors when things went down with this project. And the whole irony of the project is that it got stolen. The project was basically in the hood in London, and the best friend of the person who I was doing the grow with fucking robbed it and ended up stealing the seed project because he was a fucking moron and didn't even realize it was seeds. So the Chem IBL project, which I basically had been given a whole bunch of the Chem second backcross seeds, and what I had done with that was pick out the three best males from about, I think it was maybe 50, 60 seeds, maybe a little bit more, but it was at least 50 seeds. I picked out the best three males and then done an open pollination on like maybe four or five of the best females. So that was the plan with the Chem IBL, to do the Chem IBL for reservoir seeds, but that got stolen. And then that fucking ruined that whole thing. And Rez kind of from then showed his true colors, because he didn't offer me no help, no fucking sympathy or nothing. He just kind of left me high and dry after that. So after that, I was kind of in a situation where I had enjoyed the whole selection process so much and was so excited about those seeds and felt that I had selected such special males that I wanted to do something with them myself. I should note, for those of you not familiar with the term, IBL stands for inbred line, which is when you cross a strain into itself. So what my intention was is I basically got all of my mother plants and all of my males and started vegging them up at another spot. And what I had was my whole selection of females from the like last few years. So everything that I'd been growing out, I was thinking that I'll hit with the ChemDog males. So I had a list of things that are like, let me go through it. I've got it here. I had motor breath from Jimmy Nitz. At this point, I had motor breath from Jimmy Nitz and another one from him, which was the train wreck cross San Fernando Valley. So I had keepers from the ChemDog San Fernando Valley, which is motor breath that everyone knows it now. And then also the train wreck cross to the San Fernando Valley. That was incredible. That was like super lime, the most incredible lime terps I've ever experienced. So I had those keepers. I also had an original diesel cross the Busif. And it's funny, that one, the original diesel cut, which Rez was growing, he hermied, or well, I'm not sure if it was him or one of the other people that he had making seeds for him. They hermed. Made the fucking abusive OG Kush cut throw out pollen, and that pollinated the room. So what he then done was fucking sold those seeds because they actually turned out to be feminized and didn't have no issues. It was hilarious because he would put out regular seeds that turned into fucking Hermes at week two and pissed out pollen. But when he actually had a fuck up and made feminized seeds by accident, they were one of the most stable things the geezer ever put out. So that's fucking ironic. Another thing that we had back then, I'd got a cut from a friend, Haze Fiend. He had given me an OG Kush S1. And the OG Kush S1 was from Oregon Kids OG Kush S1s of the Ghost OG, which is the original Josh D OG Kush cut. So that was a special one. And then obviously I always had the cheese around, so that was with me. And then I'm trying to think. I had my Casey Jones. That was there. Obviously, Casey Jones is always around me at those times. So basically, all of the different cuts that I had at that time, I had in a house with the males and was vegging them up. And then, sadly, I had a fucking another issue, which is just part of the trials and tribulations of growing in prohibition places. So what happened is a friend of mine was meeting some people to move some flowers to them. And instead of one person turning up to grab the flowers, three people turned up. And within a few minutes, they had pulled a gun on my friend. And I barely managed to escape the house in a fucking towel where I just got out of the shower. So I managed to get out of the house. They luckily ran out of the house with the little bit of bud that they managed to steal, which wasn't everything that was there, but it weren't fucking no fun losing it. And basically what it meant is that upstairs where there was a grow, I now had to get rid of the grow. So it put me in an awkward position, and I now had all my plants ready to be flowered. They were all like 5 foot tall, big fucking bushes in like 10 liter pots of cocoa, ready to be flowered. So at that point, I decided, all right, maybe I can fucking see if one of my friends who's a grower can take the cuts and look after the genetics for me. And then I can just get cuts back of everything once I've got a new place and can get the genetics and start growing again. So I got in touch with a friend who my buddy Haze Fiend had actually introduced me to, was another IC Mag member. And that was OJD, who had recently started Connoisseur Genetics. So he was a friend of mine. We knew each other through our mutual friend and then obviously through the IC Mag Cup over the last few years. It's funny because I remember in 2007 when OJ and myself really become more acquainted is when I won the IC Mag Cup. And back then I had been smoking pure for 7 years, but he was still a tobacco smoker, and to be honest, his bud was terrible. When he come up to me, he wanted to know why my bud smoked so good and why his was black ash. And yeah, I basically explained to him about growing in cocoa and flushing for 3 weeks. And from then he went back to the drawing board and totally changed his old growing skills and his whole style. And he became a cocoa grower and started following my regime. So yeah, that was when we started to become more friendly with one another. And he had started his own seed company. He had a good eye for genetics, and we had exchanged cuts previously. He had took my Casey Jones cut. I took his SSSDH, which is the super silver sour diesel haze. And yeah, we had tried a few different things from each other and always shared flavors, and we got on real well at that time. So I asked him if he could take the cuts and do anything with them and look after them. And luckily he was able to. Well, what he actually done is he got another mutual friend of ours to get a room, and he got our mutual friend to basically grow the room out. But the strange thing, what he decided to do, which was a bit of a bizarre one, is rather than just look after my genetics and flower out the females, he just randomly decided that he was going to pollinate my males to all my female selections for me, and then sell them through his seed company, Connoisseur Genetics. So at that point, rather than fall out with him, and because I wasn't really too fussed about having my own seed company at that point, I was more just interested in making the seeds and doing the breeding now, and curious to see what my selections pollinated by all my males that I'd selected from the Chem Backcross. So I said to him, so what should we do then? Should I come and join you at Connoisseur Genetics because you've done all my crosses? At which point he agreed, and I became partners with him at Connoisseur Genetics, which up until that point, OJ had never even selected a male plant himself. The only crosses that he had done and released with a male that he got in a trade for some cuttings with an Amsterdam legend known as Bear, who used to do a lot of growing for DNA Genetics back in the day. He passed on the G13 Haze male to OJ. And then he had hit a few different things, like, I don't even know what he hit, to be honest. I can't remember any of the crosses, but he did some random crosses with the G13 Haze male. And then all of a sudden, I guess he had got used to using other people's males and decided to use all my males to make my crosses. So that's how we got started. And to be honest, it should have been a sign to me from then. I should have just fucking known that him taking my male and female selection and pollinating them all and making the seeds that I was going to make should have been a fucking red flag at the time, but I didn't really want to look at it that way, and I was kind of just happy that the seeds were being made and that I hadn't lost the fucking genetics, and that everything was still safe, and that I'd got out of the house with the gun incident in one piece. So at the time I was just grateful for what was happening and happy to join them at Connoisseur Genetics. So at that stage, I then realized, like, okay, we need to make this company a little bit more professional. So that's the stage when Connoisseur Genetics got a real revamp, and it actually got a logo, it got proper distribution, and it got a proper catalog of strains at that point. And yeah, that first batch of seeds, that was one of three batches that got made with my males. There was the first batch that was done there, which, although OJ will say that he done it, is all he did was take the cuts. Well, I ended up getting my dad to move 30 cuts in TV boxes, flat screen TV boxes on their side, because they hold fucking big old 5 foot tall plants. So me and my dad actually moved all of the plants and dropped them at the spot. And then OJ never even really did fuck all himself. He got someone else, a mutual friend, to do most of that grow. And to be honest, it was a fucking mess. It was a jungle of a grow. It was hilarious to actually see how mad it got, because the plants were so tall when I fucking took them there. And then my friend who was actually overseeing the grow didn't really know what he was doing. He was just slapdash watering it every day. So it was an open pollination, and the amount of seeds that fucking got made were just obscene. I think OJ's still selling those seeds now, like 10 years on. So it gives you an idea of how big the plants were and how many seeds got made. So those were my first crosses. I named all of those ones myself. I had the Kemi Jones, the Cheese Dog, the Secret Recipe, and the OG Chem, and the Chemret Kush. The OG Chem, that was an epic one, and so many people went nuts over that at the time. the thing about seeds back then is you just couldn't get a lot of things in seed form. So when we got something that had the chem and the OG notes together, although it's very commonplace nowadays, back then it was very new and very special. And that one turned a lot of heads, and that was used in a lot of work to this day. That one's still around and a lot of breeders are working with it. So yeah, that was epic. Largely in part to Jimmy Nitz's motor breath. So combined with my selection of the Kenback cross, it made something epic. As breeders, we were so lucky back then because the test grows on IC Mag were on a whole nother level. The test growers were literally today's fucking who's who of the cannabis industry. So many people that are just doing incredible, epic things now grew out our strains back then and were test growing them. And the feedback we got back and the things we were able to see and find out what the male had attributed to the females and vice versa in the crosses, it was incredible. It was invaluable. And yeah, that was a golden age on IC Mag, the forums, and breeders these days, new breeders, really have no idea what it was like back then to be a part of that. And yeah, you can go back and see a lot of that. Not long after that, I did my own, I did another batch of seeds. I remade a lot of those same crosses, and I also added a couple of other things to the room and made a couple of new things. The things that I added new to the room were, I had a Lemon Larry OG from Herbalizer, who was an IC Mag legend, and he had given me a Lemon Larry OG. So what I did is I hit that with the chem back cross, and that made Lemchem, which was one of the strains that I've used to create grape lemonade, which in turn I've used to make Chemoncello and Chemonade. So yeah, that one there got made, which is a special one. And another one that got made, which didn't get made in the original batch of seeds because the cut wasn't actually there at the time, was the Granddaddy Purple. I had been given the Granddaddy Purple cut by OJD at this stage. So what I'd done is pollinated that with the chem, and then I made Granddoggy Purps. So there was an original regular version of Granddoggy Purps, which was different to the feminized version. And that was also done in that second batch. So another batch got made with the Kenback cross before we lost the males as well, by OJ. And he hit a few different things and made strains like Fuel and a few other ones with cuts that I didn't hold. So he did make a couple of strains using my males with his selections that I don't take no credit for, really. I class those as his. But as far as all of the ones that were my males and my female selections, those are my strains, my hard work, my selection. And a third party, neither me or OJ, was the one that really actually made those seeds for us, because neither of us were there at the time. It was someone else that oversaw that. So that was a seed maker that made those, and not really a breeder. For me, the breeding is about the selection. If you're selecting a male and a female and someone else makes the seeds for you, then as far as I'm concerned, that's the breeder's credit, and they should be the one who gets responsibility and is the one who done the work there to get those results, even if someone else made the seeds for them. So yeah, we don't agree on a lot of those things, me and OJ. He has a lot of different memories than the ones that actually exist, the ones that are actually documented on IC Mag, although he's tried to delete history and cut and paste all of my work and then repost it as his own and do some super fucking weird stuff. I think it's clear to anyone that has any understanding of breeding that when it's my male and my female that make a seed, it's my fucking strain. So some of those things you'll see me work on. There was a time when eventually I split from him, and originally I made a complete new break and didn't want to step on his toes and try to salvage some kind of friendship, but he just acted like a complete cunt and done some super sly things, including pay my cousin a bunch of money to basically steal all my genetics and then make a seed run for him. So he done scumbag things like that. So I'll never forgive him on those things. And there's no love lost between us. But originally I tried to make a clean break and do completely new crosses and not rework any of my previous stuff. And that was out of respect for him. But as things go forward, I don't have that level of respect for him no more. So there will be things in the future that I'm going to be redoing and lines that I'm going to work further, like the Kemi Jones and the Cheese Dog and a few others that I've got tucked away. So yeah, I'll be delving into a few of those little genetic adventures at some point soon. Although it was only a short spell that we were working together, during that couple of years, a lot of stuff got put out. One of the main reasons for that is because OJD had a friend who would make a lot of the seeds for him, a guy that we referred to as James Bond. James Bond probably made more feminized seeds than the both of us put together. Even when we were in prison, luckily, we had James Bond making seeds, and we were able to release new strains during the time when we were incarcerated. So that was quite an achievement. And the market for feminized seeds was getting huge at that time. So we were under a lot of pressure to make fems. And the first feminized project that I ever did through Connoisseur Genetics or through anyone, it was the first time I ever did a reversal, was the GDP reversal. And we at that time were doing it with colloidal silver, which was a fucking headache. That was such a nightmare, to be brewing colloidal silver all the time and then for having to spray every day for 4 weeks. What you would do is spray 2 weeks before flower every day and then all the way into the second week of flower every day. And then that would block the ethylene long enough to get it to reverse and to get a male plant that would give you pollen and make pure female seeds. So at that time I'd done the GDP reversal, and the strains that I made were Grape Lemonade, Purple Project, Purple Halitosis. I also hit the OG Chem selection that we had. I also hit the Motor Breath, which is what made the Purple Halitosis. I hit cheese. I made a bunch of Purple Cheddar. I made a bunch of Rainbow Jones. I made some GDP S1s as well. It wasn't a huge batch, but there was enough there to get a nice little variety of fems out at that time. And those fems went down a treat. There were some real good ones from that. I'm still working with a lot of those now. I chose some of those to breed with. Some of those were released through Connoisseur Genetics, like the S1s and the Rainbow Jones and the Purple Cheddar. And some of them weren't. So I had a few that were released through Connoisseur Genetics and a few that never got released because there wasn't enough of the seeds really to release because it wasn't a huge project. I did end up selling a few of them through Seed Bay and also to begin with through my distributor. When I did launch True Canna Genetics, I sold the Purple Project and, like I say, a few of the others went through Seed Bay. That project there was my first feminized project for Connoisseur Genetics. The second one was the Girl Scout cookies, and sadly that project was a complete nightmare because we were fighting broad mites and were using Swarovski mite to fight them off, and it turns out that the Swarovski mite will eat pollen when it doesn't have bugs to eat. So what ended up happening is, as well as the reversal being super difficult to do, the Swarovski mite ate most of the fucking pollen. So when it come to harvesting, I ended up with hardly any seeds. It was like 20 seeds. Every plant had a few seeds in it. Some things I pulled 3 seeds out, some 7, some 2. It was crazy. I had like literally a couple of Girl Scout cookie S1s. I had hit the original Diesel. The Strawberry Cough had got a couple of seeds in it. The Granddaddy Purple had got a couple of seeds in it. There was a few different things that I'd done, but mostly I just spent my time smoking the buds, searching for those few seeds, and it was pretty much a write-off. And like I said, there was probably no more than 20 seeds in that whole crop. That was kind of at the point where me and OJD went our separate ways, and I walked away from Connoisseur Genetics, And like I said, it was at that point that he got my little cousin to steal all my Girl Scout cookies and Triangle Kush cuts and then do a reverse Girl Scout cookies project. So the first proper Girl Scout cookie feminized release that was done from Connoisseur Genetics was done with my clones that my cousin stole from me, and then OJD paid him to do the seeds. So that's pretty much the story of how I lost the Triangle Kush cut, and I haven't had it since. So yeah, it was a very unfortunate loss, but I'll get her back eventually. That's just to give people a little understanding of what led to us not being on good terms, because trust me, like I said, initially I walked away and tried to salvage some kind of friendship and started completely new. And when I started True Canna Genetics, I popped a whole new batch of seeds. I started some Sensi Star, some Black Domina. I started some Chem Cross SFV. So what I was able to do was start with new things that were nothing to do with the work I'd done at Connoisseur Genetics. And one of the big successes that I got was straight away with my first batch of crosses, I managed to win a second place High Times with The Truth, which was the Triangle Kush cross to the SFE Chem Dog, which I had selected. So I created The Truth, Chem Valley Cooks, a strain called Terp Life when I hit the Terpzilla with the SFE Chem. I also made the Granddaddy Terps, the Broadleaf Black, the Sagan Star, and I think that was it. And that was my first batch of seeds for True Canna Genetics. And I didn't release all of them straight away. To begin with, I released Terparella, which I got off of an IC Mag friend who had made some seeds that had won the IC Mag Cup for hash making. So because of the pressure to have feminized seeds, I just sold those through True Canna Genetics alongside the free releases that were regular seeds, which were The Truth, the Broadleaf Black, and the Sagan Star. And then the other things that I held back were the Chem Valley Cooks and the Granddaddy Terps. The Granddaddy Terps is something that I've sold recently to a couple of select people. I've still got that available. That's Purple Cheddar Cross San Fernando Valley Chem Backcross. And that one's super special. The 2014 High Times, that was entered and scored one of the highest THC readings of that year. They do most potent strains, and that was in the list for 2014. That one I've got a few packs of, so if anyone's interested in that, holler at me, and I'm going to probably let go of maybe two or three packs of that. Winning a High Times was something very special, like I've said before, not only because it's something that as a breeder back then, unless you're one of the people spending big money and kind of sponsoring and being a big baller for the High Times officials, then it's a struggle to place in these competitions. So it was a massive achievement for a breeder to get a third place, and that's kind of where a lot of people like myself used to look to get, was a third place, because normally it was sponsors and big spenders who got first and second, but to get a third place was kind of what everyone aimed for. So for me to win a second place was a massive achievement for that reason. But more importantly, the reason being that previous to that High Times win, a couple of years before, myself and OJD, we actually tried to go over to Amsterdam and win a High Times and got busted doing so. And we actually ended up doing 6 months in prison. So that made winning a High Times a lot sweeter when I eventually managed to do it. It was 2011 that we ended up going to prison, and 2014 before I was able to get my life back on track, go my own separate ways. And what I decided to actually do was, after going to prison, trying to win a High Times, and then having another nightmare trying to send flowers over to win a High Times, I decided the only way that I'd ever do it was if I was living in Amsterdam and I could trim that bud, put it in a Tupperware and take it to the High Times officials myself. I was confident if I could grow my bud out, I'd been around people and been at the High Times. And like I said, the High Times, the only one I'd ever been to when I turned up, I had the best bud there and had a lot more than everyone flavor wise. And it made me realize like, oh, a high times win is probably a lot easier than an Icy Mag Cup win, because the quality of the growers that were entering the Icy Mag Cup were real talented, high level, passionate growers. Whereas what you realize when it comes to the high times was that a lot of the growers that were doing it, it was just money people that had seed companies and were buying bud off of people, and they didn't have no passion. So when I turned up and had high quality bud, it made me realize that for me to win a high times, I've just got to grow the bud in the city, not have to go through the trouble of sending it and having issues with it needing to be sealed up and disturbed and not looking pristine. If I could trim it in the place where I was going to be entering the cup, that I had a good chance of winning. And that's what I did. I packed up my life and moved to Amsterdam to win a high times. And after a lot of fucking trials and tribulations in Amsterdam, where I lost my grow and didn't have the cuts that I wanted to enter, I wanted to enter Terpzilla. I lost the cut and lost my grow, so I had to pop one pack of each strain that I had. So I popped them all, and I only had a couple of weeks to veg them. And then after a couple of weeks of vegging, I had to flower everything. And then exactly 8 weeks, no matter what the plants looked like, I had to harvest the plants. I then had 2 weeks to dry them and 1 week to trim them. I dried, trimmed, and the day that I finished trimming, I started handing in my entries to the High Times officials. And that's how tight it was. And that's why when people say about bud needing a good cure, it's a myth. Bud, good indica, or indica hybrids don't need curing. They just need drying properly. If you dry properly for a good 14 days at 60 and 60, maybe drop the humidity down to like 55 a little bit towards the end. But that will give you the perfect dry bud that people were smoking it at that cup and saying to me, oh, this is cured really well. And I had to say, no, it's not cured real well. It's just dry properly. Too many times I see people give bud that's wet and try and say it needs a bit of a cure. Needs a bit of a fucking dry. That's what it needs. Go hang it back up in a room with 60% humidity and get it dry properly. Stop selling fucking wet bud, because the reality is we all know that bud will lose sometimes 80% of water when you dry it. And these people don't like the reality that all of a sudden that 10 kilo is now only 2 kilo. And if they can catch a little half kilo of moisture in there and then tell you, oh, it needs a little bit of a cure, then you fucking dry the bud out. I remember a friend coming to me once and saying to me, oh, this bud's a bit wet still. And I swear to you, it hadn't even been dried. It was like fresh fucking bud. I literally had to say to him, look, don't smoke that. I'll give you something to smoke just to prove a point. Dry this bud for a couple of days. Smoke this during that couple of days. And then I'm going to come back and we're going to weigh the bud. And it had literally lost 70% because the bud had been given to him wet. So sometimes people are out there, they're trying to sell their bud to clubs, people, etc., etc. And rather than taking pride in it and making sure it's properly dried and trimmed, they're trying to just skim a little bit more money on top and get some weight. So that's the game there. So don't believe that. Coco's in the background fucking around, so if you can hear a few little snorts and sniffs and ruffles, that's her. She wouldn't let me do an episode without a little appearance, a little tail wagon, a little run around to make herself known. So that's a hello from Coco to everyone. I remember going to the house to give in the samples for the high times, and it was like I knew that because of the genetics that I was working with, that I had an edge on a lot of the European people. And because of the selection I'm able to do and pick a winner, I knew what the American palate was like. I had seen what were the popular cuts amongst all of the elites. So when it comes to choosing the truth cut, I had to pick one plant that literally the whole plant had to be entered. Every last little tiny bud on it had to be entered to make up the full 35 gram entry. And I wasn't even able to test the plant. I just knew this one was the winner. I started smelling it around week 5, and straight away I knew this is something very special. It had all the elements that I wanted from that cross. So I said to my business partner at OCD Labs at the time, Ramon, come and check this one out. And he agreed, and we just kind of knew that was going to be the one to enter all the way through. We kept our eye on that one, and it just kept getting better and better. So yeah, that one was a very special cut, and it was number 7, which is always very lucky for me. Lucky number 7 has kind of popped up a lot through the years. And I kind of knew that all the experience from the Icy Mag Cup and being on the East Coast and getting to try so many of the flavors and all the different elites and really getting an understanding of what elite genetics were was going to allow me to pick out the perfect cut. And luckily I did pick out the best selection, and it won me that second place at the High Times. And when I smelt this cut of the truth when it was growing, it had the chem funk that I fell in love with on the East Coast, which I had got to know because of Grateful Head. He used to grow the Chem D so well, and he just taught me exactly what the smell was. And because of that, I was able to select a nice selection, and that was my cup winning cut of the truth. And it just had that funk that I love, and yeah, that is what for me is Chem D, and that's what makes the truth special. It's the Triangle Kush, of course, is a beautiful OG Kush, but it's the undertone of the chem that comes through. And that's what I've worked through a lot of my lines, using the truth and also even the Chem Valley Cooks. There's an underlying chem funk that anyone that knows the Chem D cut will spot that and see where my loyalty lies as far as what I favour and what things I try to put into other flavors. It's an incredible baseline. When it's dominant in the actual Chem D, it's incredible. It's so putrid, so revolting, that some people probably won't like Chem D. But when you breed with it and you're able to get those same beautiful nuances into the underlying flavors and get little bits of sour and other notes to come out of it, and get the fuel notes and get the funk and the fart gas kind of baby shit. It's like, it sounds mad to say that a strain that you love smells like baby shit and fart gas, but that is what Chem D smells like. It smells like dead skunk as well to me. I know people are always searching for roadkill skunk, but for me, I'd never smelt a dead skunk until I went to the East Coast of America, and I'd never smelt Chem D till I went to the East Coast of America. And for me, there's a lot of similarities in those smells. So yeah, I love it. And that helped me pick out a truth cut that done very well and got a second place at the High Times. As far as breeders that inspired me when I was growing early on, Shanta Barber was always the one that stood out to me. I was a big fan of Mr. Nice, Howard Marks, and Shanta Barber's projects were pretty special to me, so he was the person that always stood out early on. But as time went on and I met Grateful Head from Head Seeds, he quickly became my biggest inspiration and the person that taught me the most about breeding. He really was an encyclopedia of knowledge, and not only was he scientifically and book smart when it comes to the whole breeding, but he also had the passion and the love that takes things to a next level. So being around him and his wife, Miss Grateful, who together ran Head Seeds, really was a huge inspiration. And I took a lot of my skills and the direction that I've bred in, and a lot of my philosophies have all come from Head and his projects and the way he used to do things. I learned so much all the trips that I was over there and around him and saw all of the different breeding projects he done, because as well as his own breeding projects, he did projects for other people as well and didn't get the credit for those that he deserved. But yeah, one of the things that a lot of people who were around ResDog and know about Reservoir Seeds know, that many, many people made seeds for him. And yeah, as much as he turned out to be a rat and a scumbag, At the time, his seed company Reservoir Seeds was doing amazing numbers, and it had an amazing following, as did Grateful Head and Head Seeds. And seeing how they did things, it taught me a lot and gave me a lot of inspiration. For ResDog, I got to be honest, he taught me a lot and told me a lot, but a lot of my feelings for him were shock and surprise at how little he knew about certain things when it comes to growing. And to be honest with you, with him, it was more about being in the right place at the right time and getting the East Coast Sour Diesel cut. He also had a lot of other good genetics as well, but it was East Coast Sour Diesel that blew him up and got crazy popularity. And seeing how the whole underground forum scene worked with seed companies, and seeing how so many seed companies were thriving, it was a big inspiration. And when a lot of those people dropped off the scene, it kind of left a lot of gaps, and there were people looking for certain genetics that we had access to. There's a few other people I have to mention when it comes to inspiring me and having an impact on my philosophies and methods of breeding and things like that, and a lot of them inspired me for different reasons. For instance, Bog, Bushy Old Grower. He's someone whose nature and desire and willingness to interact with his customer base is a massive influence to me. The way he spoke to all his customers and gave feedback and helped them and was just a really nice, reachable, good-hearted person, that had a massive effect on me. I was always very, very happy to grow his things out, and yeah, he was just a nice person, and I see him touch a lot of people and help a lot of people over the years, so that was a big influence on me. Another breeder who on the forums had quite an impact and was obviously leaps and bounds a lot of people as far as it come to the scientific knowledge of plants and the real complexities, and that was Chimera. He really is quite a genius when it comes to plants, and was always a wealth of information and always sharing things and managing to do it without being condescending or talking down to people. So that was always incredible to see him do that, and I really enjoyed any interaction I had with him. I grew out his mental floss at one point on Icy Mag and did a test grow for him, and that was incredible. I really enjoyed that, so that made a big impact with me. Another one that I have to mention is Rob Connell Clark. Being a big fan of the book Hashish, that is what inspired me initially to start growing, and that is a book by Rob Connell Clark. So although I was inspired to start growing with that book, it was a long time later that I started breeding. And I have to say, his book Marijuana Botany, combined with the experience I had gathered over the years, is what gave me the confidence and knowledge to feel comfortable going forward with breeding. Any breeder out there that doesn't own Marijuana Botany by Rob Connell Clark is probably cheating themselves and their customers, because you should go through that book. That should be the Bible for breeders. And there are some other good books out there and give you a lot of information, but as far as really understanding the plant, Rob Connell Clark's Marijuana Botany is something quite magnificent. And I'm very, very lucky to say that I've met Rob on many occasions, dabbed with him and smoked with him. And I can tell you that a few short moments spent with people like him and also Sam the Skunk Man, those two people are just incredible, incredible wealth of knowledge. And I learned more from them in the short space of time that I spent with them than hundreds of hours of reading would have done, because I was able to pick their brains and ask lots of interesting questions. And no matter what it was I would ask the two of them, they would always have answers, and they would always be able to expand on the answers beyond what I was even asking and give me even more information than I thought that I needed. So yeah, it was incredible. Those interactions with Sam the Skunk Man, Dave Watson, as he's known, and also Rob Connell Clark, were incredible for me. So I have to mention those. And on the forums, there were many other breeders that did good things, and it was the ability to interact with breeders and see them do their thing on IC Mag that really made me the breeder that I am today. That period in time was a real golden age for the cannabis scene, especially the forums. The forums were so active, it was incredible. Through Connoisseur Genetics, me and OJD not only sold thousands of packs of seeds, but gave out thousands of packs. And it was amazing to see the following and how many people were just doing their thing on the forums back then, before legality hit so many places. And yeah, like I say, it was the golden age of seed companies. Nowadays, there's a lot of saturation, but back then, it was pretty special to be around and to be a part of it. That was a period where if you started a seed company, you were taking risks. It was a dangerous thing to do. And yeah, nowadays it feels like everyone wants to start a seed company. They think it's all fun games and high profile celebrity living. But what they don't realize is there's a lot of real hard work that goes into it. And a lot of the people that have come before them have taken a lot of risk and gone through a lot of turmoil to get the scene and the industry into the position that everyone finds it nowadays. So yeah, I advise people, if you're going to start a seed company, have a little bit of respect for the whole game, and don't just think that you can do your first cross and start selling it. Do what we did back in the day, hand out free seeds to people that need them, give out freebies, get results, show your worth, and then start selling your seeds. That's the real way to do it and prove your worth. I still have some original Casey Jones seeds, and I'm going to be popping those at some point soon and doing some Casey Jones projects. I'm also hoping to get back my original cut of Casey Jones that won the IC Mag second place in 2007. So yeah, if anyone out there is still holding on to that cut, get in touch and let me know, because I'd like to have her back. I want to do some fun things with her, like hit her with my Chem Valley Cooks and Truth Mails. And also I've got a few other things I'd like to do, especially when I pop the last pack of Casey Jones and start working on that project. I'm sure there's a lot of people that miss Head Seeds and the work that Grateful Head done, so it'll be nice to put out a little homage to him and do a little release of something Casey Jones related towards the end of this year, hopefully, if things go well. So keep an eye out for that. I'll always look at my time in Amsterdam with such fondness. It was an amazing place to be with some amazing friends around me, and to top it off by winning the High Times second place was just incredible. I had so many ups and downs surviving over there without good friends around me, like Don from DNA and their whole team, the whole DNA team. They just fucking were such good friends, and we had such an incredible adventure during that little period of 2 years almost that I was over there. Same with Soma. Soma's just the most beautiful, kind-hearted, wonderful friend I could have hoped for. He went from being someone who I looked up to and regarded as one of my favorite breeders back in the day and had so much respect for, so over the years to become friends with him, and then to be in Amsterdam and be around him and be able to learn from him as a grower and as a human being in general, that was always special. That was an amazing time. And yeah, to all the people that were in Amsterdam at that time, it was a magical period of time. Some of the friends that I made, I don't talk to so much these days, but I have fond memories of it all. And it is an epic time that will go down in history for myself and a lot of those people. So yeah, it's nothing but good memories for me. Even the trials and tribulations, lots was learned. One of the sad things about Amsterdam was that I wasn't able to have real successful grows, and it was just such a difficult place to grow. And although I did get a High Times crop out of the way, I lost crops, and it was just very difficult to set up and do anything without raising suspicion, because it was a culture that was so used to growers that people were aware that you might be a grower, and neighbors would literally knock on the door and ask you what you were doing when you moved in. So yeah, that was one of the reasons that Amsterdam, although it was important for me to be there to win the High Times, by this stage I had fallen in love with breeding and I was itching to get on with new projects. And I had a seed selection over the years that was huge from not only myself but other people that I'd collected seeds from. So I had to get on with the next part of my plan, and that was always to go to Spain. And because I had now met friends that were in Barcelona, Barcelona in particular became the destination of choice. And pretty much soon after winning the High Times, by February, March that the next year, I had already started going to Barcelona and was making plans to move there. And then by March for Spanibus of 2015, I had moved to Barcelona and started my adventure over there. And I always knew that if I got to Barcelona, I would be able to get growing on a scale where I could do selection, and the freedom of being able to grow with less stress would make it easier for me to be able to actually have a stable of genetics and do the things that I really wanted to. So I headed to Barcelona and started the next phase of my adventure. And Barcelona was exactly what I dreamt of. Although it's been a lots of ups and downs, it did allow me to, straight away when I got here, I started like 300 seeds, a variety of different things, and started a whole bunch of new breeding projects. And basically the lessons that I'd learned over the years and my ability to select a male, what I'd done was select a truth male and also Chem Valley Cooks male. And then I've been able to hit a lot of my selections and see what those plants breed and what I'm able to do with them and the combinations I've been able to do. And yeah, basically I'm breeding the lines now that I feel with the Chem Valley Cooks lines and also the Truth lines, they carry on traits with the males that allow me to add other favorable traits with the mothers and create unique new lines. So that's the direction that I've been heading in since I got here. And the initial selection was a lot of fun to go through so many seeds and get a nice stable. And I try and keep the numbers down, but I seem to float between 30 to 40 mother plants at any time, and so often creeping over the 40 mark. At the moment I'm at 41, I think. So I've slipped and crept over, but I need to get rid of a few and whittle down a couple of the selections soon and give a few out. So that will happen soon. But Barcelona's been amazing and it's been fun. And yeah, the Amsterdam experience, that was a beautiful one. But I always knew I had to get to Barcelona because the social club scene and so many other elements made it special and made it perfect place for me to be as a breeder, somewhere I could showcase my skills and also showcase my strains and be able to breed and see what my strains do outdoors as well. Has also been a lot of fun. One of the things I've been very fortunate is to receive some incredible landrace genetics over the last few years. Luckily, social media has allowed me to show people my passion and the different projects I'm doing, and that's meant people have seen the love that I've got for what I do and have gifted me some very unique, special genetics. As many of you know, I already work with Chocolate Thai and a Filipino. I've also got my Afghani landrace and Pakistani landrace, and soon I'll be starting some Sumatra tripping weed from Indonesia, and I have some other things coming soon from Papua New Guinea that I'm going to be working with, and I have some Nepalese, Afghani and several other Pakistani lines I'm going to work through. Plus I'm also going to go through the last of my Chocolate Thai seeds. So I have a lot of plans over the next couple of years, as well as running the Truth lines and the Chem Valley Cooks lines. I intend on doing some pure land race hybrids, as well as combining some old favourites with new land race and some new favourites with some new land race. So I'll be doing a lot of different things, and slowly I'll be releasing them, getting testers from reliable, trustworthy growers that have good online following and are active. I don't care if you've got 30,000 followers, but you just have to have active page with lots of good photos and lots of passion, and then I'll send you out testers. Otherwise, as many breeders will tell you, you send out 100 packs of testers and you're lucky if you get 10 people who fully document them and give you the results back. So over time, you whittle out all the good ones from the bad, and then you get yourself a good base of test growers. And what I tend to do now is give out test seeds with purchases. So people who support me and buy something, I will always make sure they get a good deal, some extra release seeds and also some unreleased testers for them to try too. So yeah, I'll be doing a lot of things, and you'll be able to see them all on my Instagram. So if you're not already following, keep an eye on True Cannabis, the True Canna Genetics page on Instagram. And hopefully by the end of this year, we'll have our website sorted too. For now, I think we've pretty much done a good little bout of stories on breeding and what got me started. I've left quite a few bits out because, yeah, I'm not sure about statute of limitations on certain things and what's safe to say and not to say. But in general, I've given you a good outline of what got me breeding, what trials and tribulations happened. I'll tell you about the whole prison story in another episode as well. That deserves its own episode as well, the whole going to prison, trying to win a High Times. Yeah, that definitely deserves its own episode. So I'll make sure I get that one done before too long. I'm going to try and get a couple of breeder friends on soon. So hopefully we'll be seeing some breeder episodes where I talk to some friends about what got them started in breeding, growing, smoking, all of those things. Find out a little bit about their history. But for now, I think that's everything. So thanks for listening, everyone. It's been a pleasure. I probably bounced around a little bit and the story may well be all over the place, but hopefully it's given you guys a good little understanding of my start to breeding. Take care. Speak to you all soon.